You really were scooting.
Like, yeah, you messaged me and I was probably pushing it too much, but I was like, I don't know, maybe Jem's still making coffee. I'm not in a rush. Hopefully he's not in a rush. And I was finishing this programming of this part and I was like in the middle of it. And it's like, well, I could just stop it in between tools and then I'm going to forget what I'm doing. Hopefully not crash anything because I'm not aware. So I'm like, I'm just going to finish this.
I was not in a rush. I was enjoying my coffee.
That's good boy. I have coffee left.
How's
it going?
Yeah, good. Good.
Fully.
Yeah, good. I don't know, man. It's all a blur. Life's a blur. Just drinking my coffee.
Life's a party.
And how's the big ass sale progressing?
The bass sale?
Bass. Good.
Why didn't we use sheep and not donkeys? It's funny, those images I made 2 years ago with like GPT or I can't remember what I used for it. They looked very shitty when I went to go like remove and change stuff. And I had reused them last year, which I was a little frustrated at myself for doing years in a row. So I didn't use any AI images this year, actually. I used real images. I took one out of Jem's playbook and did a photo shoot. So I haven't done a proper photo shoot in like 2 years, if I even consider it a proper one anymore, but like a real camera, a strobe light, a tripod, me on a ladder with a tripod in my hand on top of the ladder, you know, that kind of thing.
It was a great shot. I immediately noticed and messaged you about it. I was like, oh, crispy, delicious. Because I don't know where I now first... said
it was AI.
I know. I don't know if I first saw it as an Instagram still or in an email.
Right, I think you said story, like an Instagram story maybe.
Story, that's right.
It's the first place I posted it.
I was immediately drawn to the image and yeah, it looked analog. I was like, delicious.
Mm-hmm.
This is our future. Well, you know, real things are a premium.
Real photos.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I messaged you and you said something nice about it. And I was like, I could not believe how much longer it felt like it took to do that. Like just simply, I mean, the intent was to put a bunch of products across, you know, the shot. So you could kind of get the idea of like, oh, there's a lot of stuff on sale or just an array of products that I hadn't done anything like that for a while and forever, I guess, in some regards, a lot of new stuff. And so just going to pick it all up and bring it over to the router where I was putting it all and arranging it and, you know, the lighting and it's just, I was shocked. It took me like, I want to say like 3 hours total, including like a little bit of editing. It's way longer than I would have thought.
Yeah.
Or I remember it anyway.
So yeah, I've been thinking of you, wondering how it's all going. You slammed.
Good. Yeah, it's been a complete success. Today is the first like slow day, which has been, looking back at the past like day by day sales, this is common. The third day isn't the busiest day by any means. It's only the third year we've done this. So yesterday we beat our best single day sale record by 20%. So I was pretty happy about that. Everybody's pretty happy.
That's awesome.
Yep.
Good work.
It's nice. Good feeling.
I'm going to just give you some shit about your website because I wish people would do this to me because I could never remember your domain. Whenever we're chatting about stuff, I always Google you. PDCCNC. No, that didn't work. BDX. No. And I hit...
BDSMCNC.
I hit your front page and my immediate thought was like, hang on, is this Justin's old WordPress? Have I gone to the wrong spot? And then
probably went to the Portland. Yep.
And then I clicked on products and then it's like, whoa, sexy. That's beautiful. Look at that flat lay. It's like,
forgot about the Squarespace page for this.
Why am I not getting that flat lay first up? Come on, man. Let's pause everything while you update that.
Get rid of this freaking Squarespace site.
You really do.
It's so stupid.
It's a beautiful image. Well done.
It's between like get rid of the Squarespace site, these hot new products I want to get out, and then like customers we've been telling will make versions of tool tag towers that they want for like a year.
No, right.
And I'm like, it's, well, yes, but I, you know, like how do I prioritize a tool tag tower over,
yeah, totally,
you know, a product that could be $100,000, you know, it's like,
yeah,
a
yeah.
Year. It's just, it's so hard to like, yeah, I'll drop everything and do that real quick.
Yeah, how are, how are your focus levels? Because I'm feeling scattered AF as at the moment.
Horrible. Not good.
I was thinking about this last night as I was like driving to work, thinking, well, I've got to get up in 5 hours to record with Justin, having just come out of a Claude Code fever dream. I was like, I'll just go to work now and I'll wake up fresh, chat to Justin. I was thinking about how many projects I've got on the go. It's just like, idiot. Like, what am I doing? Like, I can barely remember what I was working on yesterday. Yeah. Me. No, I'm the idiot. Just got too much, too many things.
Like, why am I even wasting my time with this?
Just like, I don't know. Feel real blurry at the moment. Dipping my toe into too many things. And I think, like, I think it's all mainly headed in the right direction, but like, yeah, last two nights I've just been completely distracted by trying to never do bookkeeping in my life again and set up some sort of,
I have suspicions,
automatic bookkeeping. Because I use Xero, you use Xero too, right?
Yep, yep. I don't believe it. What do you do?
So Wednesday night. Wednesday night's supposed to be my like bookkeeping catch up night where Laura and I, after the kids are down, are like reconciling our little hearts out. And I sat down to it and I was just like,
you
this
help
is
with it? Oh my God.
Laura's supposed to help, but she's so busy with their project at the moment. It's kind of back in my court at the moment. Anyway, I sat down to it and I was like, I hate this. Like, what a waste of time. Because for Australian tax compliance, we have to have tax invoices attached to everything. So it's like some of those come through to Xero semi-automatically. Most don't. I've got to go off and find all those things. Right. Reconcile them, make sure it's assigned to the right account, blah, blah, blah. Anyway,
so they
know the joys
analyze your Xero, or you just have to submit stuff probably?
It's if you get audited, then you're going to have to find all that stuff. And so it's kind of at the threat of being audited that you want to be a good boy and make sure all your accounts are in order. Anyway, that's something we've done pre 2016, before I hired Sarah. I used to just stuff all my receipts in a plastic bag and label them with a year and put them away and never look at them again.
That was going to be my suggestion, is like do the Amazon thing where it's like when the package fails six times, then fix the problem.
But since, you know, for the last 10 years, we've been very diligent, you know, attaching every receipt. I think because Sarah came from a business that had been audited and she'd known like firsthand how much of a shit show that was of actually trying to get all your books in order, like how hugely disruptive that can be.
Yikes.
Anyway, so we're trying to be good, and yeah, I just hate it. It just seems like such a low value use of time.
Despise it.
And
that and tax prep.
It's the same thing. Instead of reconciling, I was like, cool, I'm going to build a pipeline so that all of this happens as automatically as possible. And Johnny had been mucking around with Claude Code. I've avoided Claude Code this whole time, and I've got a couple of friends who are deep down that rabbit hole, and I was like, cool, let's just try this on. So me and Claude had a date, a bookkeeping date, and we've made some serious progress over the last two nights. I got like about as automatic as Xero will let you be with like, yeah, automatic.
What did you actually do though? I don't understand, because it's like,
okay,
I use it too. They've offered these auto reconciling features and I just have
it's awful.
Confidence.
Yeah, I've tried them. They're terrible. So Xero's got its own auto-reconciling and it's awful. I've basically made a thing that crawls my inbox and a few local folders and pulls all the PDFs together, like goes off and finds all the invoices, and then it sends them to an API to extract the data. Like rips using Haiku or something. It's like ripping all the data out of the PDFs and storing them in a database. And then basically it's creating bills for every transaction in Xero. And then once there's a bill in Xero with the right amount, then Xero will auto match. You just have to click the little OK.
Yep.
So
you have to do that step still.
Xero completely lock out true like automatic reconciliation, but you just can't. They've said, you know, that they're not, they have no intention of releasing that feature other than their own like beta tool that doesn't work well. So that's about as automatic as they can get, but saves a huge amount of time because then the PDF's attached, the account's right, like everything's like set up, and I just need to click the little green box on each transaction and it's good.
Yeah.
It's progress, and it'll save a huge amount of time.
Same thing, that the primary problem for me is related to Amazon. So I could probably, you know, if I can get rid of Amazon and Zorro, I borrow a lot from Zorro, and anything where the order gets split, it's a nightmare. Yeah. Because I was actually fairly good, I say before last year, I was really quite good about entering as I purchased stuff into Xero, and that became such a mess. I've realized at some point that it was failing me because then it wasn't auto finding those purchases, right? The bills. And so I kind of just like, I wouldn't say I gave up on it, but I was like, oh, I'll fix this later. And then that was like 3/4 of the year last year. I had just like stopped reconciling most things that weren't immediately auto reconciling. So my theory now is don't enter anything in and do it once a month, which I've yet to do this year. I'm back on the path of last year again, except for I'm at least not lying to myself. I just still feel bad that there's a solution. I did find there's some like software that will automatically kind of do what you're saying, put orders into as like bills potentially from, it's like a plugin you can either pay or it's free, I forget, for Amazon and some other services. Because other than that, like when I just go to buy something, as long as it's like a single purchase, single transaction, that's easy. Like that part is like not complicated. It's the, oh, that got split up into 3 different situations. And now like, how do I track that? And
oh, awful. Yeah. That sounds messy. I don't think I've got that problem. I think we get pretty clean singular transactions for the most part. Shopify's a bit like that. Like a
back order, yeah.
Shopify incomes like that. You got to do weird splitting and assignment of things.
Oh, I do nothing anyway. With that. It just all comes in as one big chunk, and it's like Shopify income. And I don't do anything else with it.
Anyway, so my bookkeeping now looks like sort of MS-DOS. I'm doing it all in terminal. I run a script. It rips what it needs to. It checks things with me. It's quite entertaining.
That sounds terrible to me. Like,
oh no, it's beautiful. Better? It's a beautiful thing. Yeah, it's great. It's great because it's it's entertaining, but it's you know, it's semi-automatic. I just
wait. See if I remember this. Yes. Yeah, I told you about this. I think when it came up, and this is going to pass by. It took me a while, but for anybody that's mildly interested in this stupid podcast I listen to, or not even podcast, it's a guy, he calls himself the Primogen. It's like, as I was getting into software development, he's kind of like turned into like the like talking head YouTube dude who talks about all the AI tools and all the things happening in software development. He's entertaining, kind of bombastic, and he and a couple other guys started a podcast, and the podcast, this is brilliant. Like, if I don't know what our equivalency would be, but it's a shopping, like an e-commerce where you're buying coffee, but you do it through terminal. And so it like has an experience of shopping through Terminal. So you can like
SSH
terminal.shop. And it's amazing. Cause like I didn't even know Terminal could do some of this stuff. And I tried it. I was like, what the how does that work?
That's sick. I love it. I love it. It reminds me of the little Pomodoro timer I made last week, which it also runs in Terminal. It was inspired by sort of like these MS-DOS games. Did you ever play Alley Cat?
Sounds familiar. I follow that's weird. I follow a CNC company called Alley Cat.
Anyway, so yeah, I have been doing things like this, random projects.
Yep.
Every problem I come across, I'm like, ooh, what can I code up for that solution? Ooh,
I think
let's
I,
burn some more tokens.
I can kind of, like, I'm not going to say that I have, that I'm beyond that, because I definitely have, but like, I think the shop board was my last thing. But I had been so far into that for so, like, how many different things, plugins for things, you know, you've been doing some of it too, but like, I just kind of burned out, like really hard burned out the last couple of weeks where I just had like no interest in coding things the last couple of weeks or like working on apps and stuff. I'm just like, you know, just really burned out. It was like my trip to Kansas, like kind of hit a wall. I was just, got ready for the sale, didn't do any other extra, you know, outside Portland CNC stuff. I'm just trying to keep it together for the last couple of weeks. I don't know. Been exhausted.
Yeah, I've noted that from abroad as much as I can observe you through the through the digital ether. I've noticed your
what was the tell?
Withdrawal. Just like, I don't know. I assumed it was focus on the upcoming sale, which it sounds like it was, but also a little bit protective, maybe.
Yeah, I had a very exuberant toddler that's been difficult as well. So,
yeah,
just growing pains.
Yeah, I know about that. I have a question for you. With all the, I know you're maybe not doing it right now, but with all the fingers in toes, multiple projects, a little bit. How do you tackle knowing where you are up to on something? Like, how do you leave breadcrumbs for yourself so that when you come back to a project, you know what you're doing, why you're doing it, where you're up to? Because I'm struggling with that.
It used to be really hard. And I think that I was working on one airshop for like alone, like with very few exceptions for, you know, let's say a year. And so I would forget. And I actually, we're going to probably have him on here in a future show we talked about, but I've been talking to Justin Gray, formerly of Toolpath, and he's a real developer.
And a real boy.
Tools for us kind of people to help us vibe code safer. He's the vibe code prophylactic. And he was at least made me feel better in that he was confirming my feelings of trying to do some of the things I was doing as really challenging, where you're like trying to merge different branches and work on multiple major features and bring it back to the main portion, that was really hard. And I was like, oh good, that makes me feel better that I'm not just like weak in the brain now. But saying all that, the more projects I have separate cursor windows open, and the biggest thing that I find that helps this is to work from the plan mode with like, it's very good at outlining steps and all that kind of stuff, and then making sure it kind of does it on its own, where it like confirms what it's done and builds really good, like, let's say like work plans and overarching README files. And so it's kind of doing it on its own. So I'll just be like, so where are we at with building this thing after 2 weeks, you know? It's like, well, it looks like you did X, Y, and Z. And this is also really beneficial to like be committing to GitHub with, you know, decent commentary, because then it knows what just happened and it looks at the timeline and it kind of does it on its own. I won't say it's on its own. It's at my urging, but it's definitely gotten a lot better on its own too.
Yeah, finally taking your advice and switching most of my projects to having a GitHub home has been a massive time saver and improvement. And it's actually starting to work really well between me and Johnny, because Johnny is like down this rabbit hole as well now. I looked at his cursor spend last night and I'm like, holy smokes, might have to have words to him on Monday. I mean, he's been building some awesome stuff, but it's like,
Composer 3.
Jeez, hold off on Opus 4.7, bro.
Right.
But it's starting to work really well between us of like, you know, the other day I wasn't even in the office and he messaged me about him piggybacking off one of my projects to build out the sort of CAM side of it. I'm building the web configurator for the new shelves and he's building the CAM, automatic CAM side. He messaged me about like JSON output from the new builder. And I was like, oh, I haven't built that yet. And then, you know, but have a look at the Git and see where it's at. Because it might be just under the surface somewhere. And, you know, next morning I come in, I see an email from Vassell saying, you know, that so-and-so's merged with my main. And I'm like, oh, so he has. There's a new button. It's like, good on you. That's sick.
Wild.
It's pretty cool. Anyway,
I'm not really back in the first days when I was doing your shop with a guy I was working with. I would say it was a little bit maybe old school, but still, like, you know, there's some good practices that I feel like I learned from that about maybe like GitHub hygiene per se.
Yeah. And
it's taught me too. Like, as I'm going along, I'm like, how would you normally do this? And it like kind of works in its own like standard way that's nice, but just the whole like who merges and like getting to the place if you want to do like PR, you know, PRs or what the hell does that mean? Something review? Program review? No. What
is I that? Don't know.
What does the P mean?
I don't know. PR.
Pull request, which
yes.
The whole language around like merging and pulling and pushing, it's taken me like 2 years to get my brain around, because like it seems opposite. Like I don't think of pulling, I guess it makes sense to pull it together into the main, but I think of it as like a merge. Mm-hmm. Or I just have to be very explicit about what I want to do usually, but anyway, that's crazy to like think of working with your CNC machinist on the software you're making for your business now.
He is making some cool stuff. He's kind of making himself redundant, but not in a way that he is actually of any risk. But like, he's just building some cool stuff that is basically bypassing the need to use Fusion for any of us on the team with standard stuff.
Especially for production files, right?
For production files, yeah. Obviously not for bespoke.
Not custom.
Not custom, but semi-custom. So like, you know, Akita Parts we did this week, which was custom width, custom depth. So that changes the grid of the bores and the size of the shelves. He took the parts list that is script generated in Rhino, and he put the parts list into his, like, one of these tools he's made, which are, like, accessible to the team on the server now as a dashboard, and it just spits out all the CAM, sends it straight to the machine. It's got like machine status lights now, so you can see which CNC machines are online. It'll send the G code straight to them, and like completely bypasses any sort of manual CAM process. And it's pulling it from a parts list, which is also generated automatically in Rhino from blocks and stuff. So just a super tight workflow. Very, very impressed.
Oh, I see. Interesting.
Yeah.
And cool. This is standalone where it doesn't need to be run from cursor or like a local script, or like how does it work? Is it all web app?
It's a little web app just running on our server. So it's completely standalone. It's all just Python ripping G code together somehow. I don't think he knows how it works. I certainly don't. But it works.
This is a very good introduction too. Maybe if it'll work out, maybe next week we have Justin come talk with us here about the safety of
safety.
Like, I have reservations about what you're talking about, like running CNCs with these things you're creating that your machinist has made. And I'm not going to say any of it's wrong. No, nothing like that. Like, go for it. But what I've talked about with him and what I've implemented on my own is, I think there's a gap for sure, but he's working on tools for people like us to make safety kind of inherent in coding tests and like redundancies and making sure that you, because they're just very forgetful, right? They just don't follow or know your full intent regardless of what you tell it. So in one of these iterations, when you're just merging to main and you go to post the next one and it's like, oh, sorry, we just went straight into the tool changer.
Crash
like,
the machine. Yeah.
Screw you. I'm sorry. That was my mistake. Yeah. I just forgot to write that whole block of code for some reason.
Yep. Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, that's kind of what makes it so addictive though, right? It's all a bit of a gamble. It's like a bloody slot machine. The whole thing's a slot machine. It's like, I put my money in. Why do I get out? Ring-a-ding-ding.
But as you're talking about this, I was thinking this might be like a really cool, like bring your own thing you've built, where we could have a few people, yourself, I was thinking of Matthew's creations, and like particularly in your case, I think it's really cool if you care to share it, and like we could have Johnny on too to talk about like and show what you've built just as like an example, and it would make for a really good, like, I think, interesting visual content rather than just listening to it us talk about these things. So I don't know.
Yeah, kind of totally fun. Yep. Agree.
And it's actually CNC related for once.
Yeah. What were you running on the thing that cuts the metal before you scoot it over here?
The metal, the oomps.
Oomps.
It's hard to make into a word. I've been needing to convert, I'd say the two parts we make for ATC pedestals that are like the least production ready, and we make them kind of in batches and just not come back to them very often. And I've never made fixtures. They've always just made in a vise, are what we call probe stands. And they basically just hold up the tool height probes, and there's two different ones for shop savers. And so I made two different ones, and they are, I think I'm embarrassed about them. I've just never liked the design of them. They're super functional.
Oh yeah.
I tried some like more aesthetic designs of the cylindric one, and I hated those, and they were way harder to make when they were like that. And add to that, that they're like, they're very different looking. Mm. They don't particularly feel like they fit with the product. And I had never set them up to run the UMC. So I was going through the process of what used to be four setups and a vise on the three axis to making the cylinder stand, now down to two, which is kind of like my like baby steps towards using the UMC like everybody else, the big boy, like one and done fixture kind of thing, one and done in a vise. And so I was just running that, and I only had one problem where I kind of drilled, I wouldn't say I drilled too deep, but it was rubbing on the shaft of my drill.
Oh, ring-a-ding-ding.
Which is, you know, it happens. It didn't crash by any means, and it was simulated properly. But I keep coming back to this thing, and I need to like talk to more professionals, people that actually do this and know what they're doing with these machines, which is always tends to be poor Dylan.
Poor Dylan.
Like,
poor Dylan.
The risers, the probe stands, future products. What we've never done is like machine apart so that it like hangs on by a sliver, and you break it off and you get rid of that sliver, and then you don't need to flip that over and cut that backside again, right? That's what everybody, that's the dream. You're done after one setup, one and done. And I can't rationalize that looking like a good product in the end, but it feels like a prototype to me.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like everything else is this nice machine surface, and then I've got a metal tab I've got to take off and then buff off. And then now that side's kind of like lightly buffed or something versus the rest is a machine surface. Even though it's like a massive win for production speed, I just always default to like, well, I'll just flip it over into a soft jaw. And, but, you know, it's a whole other step.
It does. Yeah. I don't know anything about that world really, but it's always sort of struck me as a bit of a trick, not necessarily a production workflow, having that little tab. I don't know. It's a cool trick and it's kind of impressive and it's like a machinist skill points. But yeah, I have the same concerns as like, yeah, do you then, how do you hacks all that off? Like, is it the part then being ground and tumble finished or like, it's yeah.
Super. Yeah. So that this is like, I don't know. I mean, and I also talk to people that like Dylan that don't do production work. He does prototypes. Mm. It's just like, no, like they're super. He and others are very nice to entertain my questions all the time about this kind of stuff. But, you know, some of it's I need to try it more. I have a very nice saw I bought from, it's a Grant saw. What the hell is that called? Horm, whatever it is. It's a very nice saw. And it can cut really flush. And it's a finished surface, theoretically. Kind of looks like a face mill. And so you end up with this, like, human hair width of metal left, and it, you know, especially if you're going to start doing any type of automation here, it would make complete sense that you would do it like this. So I bring the part out of the vise out or whatever, and it's just this little tick. And I think part of the thought process, and we always consider the ATC pedestal as kind of a dying product because it's, you know, we talk about this all the time, it's serving a product line that got changed after we built and redesigned it and made it so that it's kind of not necessary for that specific, you know, line. And so I'm not like looking to optimize and create new versions. And it's more of a study of like, well, what would I anodize them? Like, is it, you know, I could tumble them. They're fairly large parts that I feel like would get pretty beat up and softened if I tumbled them, to get rid of that look. So I don't know. I just always get this like, I don't know how to solve that problem kind of from an aesthetic point of view.
Yeah. Yeah. I just heard a notification as you were talking and I looked left and your face had popped up on your website of like, hey, it's Justin. Want to chat? Yeah.
Did it work?
Cool pop-up. Yeah. Made me want to message you.
Nobody's,
and I was like, wait.
Nobody's clicked on that one, actually. I added that during the sale.
It's very cute.
Oh, no, two people have clicked it now. Maybe it was you.
I did click it, yeah. I am one of those people. Yeah, I don't know. It's all a mystery to me, finishing metal. Yeah, I feel like I would be the guy that just sticks everything in the tumbler, but that's because that's what I do with my timber parts. It's like if it's small,
I should try it.
Needs finishing, goes in the tumbler. Do you have a tumbler?
Yeah, it's like a, I don't know what analogy. It's about this big.
Your shoebox? Like
basketball, maybe, sized one. We looked at getting a more expensive, nicer ones when we were kind of in Fang production crunch, and they've slowed down to the point, and we also kind of figured out how to maximize it, like maybe double. Just a great vibe code prophylactic. Woo!
So are we chatting to Justin next week?
I'm going to show you the part. Yeah, I wish I had to find a time he was down to do it. Can you see this now? So there's the part. If you'd like to see this. It's very basic, but like the difference would be if we just stuck it on, you know, an end in the vise vertically versus now I'm doing all of it like this and then flipping it over at the end and taking the hat off, and because I can back chamfer it and, you know, all the stuff from one side basically. There's nothing on the other side. It's just flat. So yeah, it's feels goofy.
Yeah. Have you had much time for your new products that you're developing?
I was trying to get out one of the kind of smaller versions for the sale, and then I decided that that was kind of foolish. And so we just focused on getting all the stuff we already have ready and making sure everything was good. It's the most I've ever prepared for anything like this.
Nice.
You know, it wasn't like a crazy amount of time, but it was like making sure we had all the stuff we needed ordered. And I kept having these moments of like, God, what if nobody buys anything? Or it's just like normal week of sales. Like I was last year was a fluke that was like increased. And I'm very thankful to say that that wasn't the case. It's kind of like roughly half a month of sales in a week. Who knows? Maybe the next week we'll be dead and then it's kind of a wash. But it does feel, I'd still feel very happy with the decision to move away from Black Friday competition and create our own little Black Friday where we can focus that and not compete with all the other stuff. I'd say that crazy enough, you've probably seen some, my Meta ads were until today doing absolutely crazy returns. Like
cool.
Ones that had no training at all started like, I started one on Monday and one on Tuesday, and both of them were doing like many multiples returns. Like one is at 10.4 ROAS and the other is 5.4. And it's only gone down in the last day, but it was like crazy. 16 and 7.
No, I haven't seen any. It's not me clicking on them. I'm not bringing your ROAS down. Sense. Yeah. That's cool. Yeah, I feel like after that little like price rise sale-y thing we had a month ago, like web sales have been pretty flat. Pretty flat. Mm-hmm. But which is annoying because I'm feeling like very much the bottleneck again in terms of our sales process of like everything goes through me. If I'm not working on quotes and drawings, then we have no sales, which is frustrating. I mean, we've made good progress towards sort of a really product focused model, but I'm trying to work out why I'm still the bottleneck. Like, do I make custom too easy, too convenient? Is that why I'm still doing so much custom quoting? Or, I don't know. Something I need to work on. Spend less time coding up random shit and more time just doing like web optimization work, which I know what will happen. I'll sit down to do that work and I'll be like, oh, this is boring. How can I make a tool to make this easier? That's how that's going to go.
I had that exact feeling about the things I need to there's a bunch of stuff, including the cylinder stand, kind of, you know, products that we were selling that had fixtures, and even like we're doing another run of parts for one of our mill customers, and they were done on the UMC or the YCM originally. So I had a whole saga of trying to get fixtures remade and fixed. And I had some friends help me finish that finally. And I need to start actually machining them. I got everything set up now and the material and all that. And I just kind of similarly, I wouldn't say I was trying to find like coding solutions or tools, but I just literally the focus to sit down and program for like an hour straight without like a distraction or like a question, I feel like it was like impossible to find. And it's, you know, router programming is one thing, but like when you can accidentally crash an expensive tool into a device and then your UMC is trash, like it's just a whole different, like I can't do other things and that.
Yeah, totally. I find it really hard to find any time for deep work at the moment.
Yeah, same.
I mean, my team's awesome. It's not like my team's running in here interrupting me every 5 minutes. Like they're so bloody autonomous. They work so well. Yes, Discord pings off a bit. Like there's a fair bit of chatter on Discord among between the team. But like, I think I'm the problem. It's not really my environment. Put me in any environment now, and I'm just like scatterbrained. yeah. jumping on all sorts of random shit.
To go back to your custom projects. Mm,
please.
I can imagine, and there's two sides to it. You know, if we were trying to stand back and say, like, how do you scale this up? You would get rid of a lot of the custom stuff, or you would make custom easy for the customer to do on their own, where it's not make a custom hole or shrink this 92% so it's a custom shelf, but like give them, I guess, more options that are standard, or just say, you know, this is kind of the product line and see where that goes. Like, see if you actually lose 40% of your business that you would have had otherwise, or they'll just slap back into it being a standard solution. There's definitely a virtue to offering the custom, but like that it's you having to drive it alone feels like a huge, I have these problems too, a huge, like, I would say, you know, a weak link, right? That the business kind of hinges on that feels, I'm sure you feel that too, just not great.
Yeah. Yeah. It is a weak link, a bottleneck. And, you know, it's not like I haven't done this before either. Like, it's kind of like the transition of a few years ago where it was like, it was really like saying no to true custom work. And we've made that transition. And now I'm doing too much custom product, which is great position to be in. But I've kind of got to do a similar thing now of like, okay, now we're doing, it's great balance and great improvement, but now I need to make hard decisions again of like, cool, no, this is the wrong, this used to be the right sort of work and it's now not ideal.
How much incentive is there in money for people to pick the production part?
None, because I'm basically doing customization for free. Like, I'm making myself very accessible. You can text me from our website.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Which people do, and it's great. And I like servicing them like that. Justin sold something, flashing lights.
Did you hear that?
Didn't hear it, but I saw the lights go off and your sharp intake of breath.
I'll come back.
I'm making myself very available. Enjoy that. But I'm also like, there's no financial incentive for someone to go stock really at this stage because I'm just like, whoa, this is so easy. Yes, here you go. Here's a custom one. Which is, you know, I'm getting great feedback.
I don't think he has the time, but can Johnny do this?
Doesn't have time. He totally could.
But you don't have the time either. I'm just being a pill trying to
do
break
it.
The big questions.
Do it. Break me down.
I am constantly up against the same stupid problem of my own stupid problem of like, all right, shop coordinator, you don't have enough to do. I have 100,000% too much
drowning.
To do, but yeah, I can't find the way to like give you the things to do that you need to do. And so I, you know, I think that's part of why I was like feeling, I had a little bout of a light depression coming back from Wichita and feeling overwhelmed and like, you know, not feeling like I wanted to have more things ready for the sale. It's just, you know, the shop board thing I wanted to have out in a different way and like have air shop in a different place. It just felt like everything was like way behind and I didn't have any chance to like, I don't know. I just don't feel like I have, you know, the time. And so obviously having hired somebody, that was part of the plan. So I did start to give them more, but I'm still constantly in this place of like, not they and I also feel like I'm not giving them enough of my things to do. So I need my own version of this. And some of that's like dealing with job shopping queries where it's like, at this point, I'm now just like kind of giving free rein to be like, that's a bad project. And slowly starting for them to learn enough to like turn them away and do those kind of things. But it feels like there's a certain point to where you've gotten your custom projects. You either disincentivize them by money. It's 50% more expensive to do a custom part. And so they're going to start to push themselves back. Be like, I'm happy to do it, but just know it's a lot more costly. It's not, you know, it takes us a lot longer. You're paying for my design time. And I don't think that's wrong. I think it's just the reality. And then, secondly, like, can somebody else, you're saying Johnny, just, there's no chance. He doesn't have any opportunity, even with him making himself redundant.
Yeah, maybe if he continues down this path of automating his job, then yeah, maybe. I think, you know, it's probably a little bit, we're just in a tricky spot at the moment because we're doing this job for Laura, for the commission, Public Art Commission. So like the CNC is maxed out and Johnny's like maxed out with programming time. Like it's quite a CNC intensive, programming intensive job. Milling up all this Akoya for Laura. And we're doing it as a LB job, but like it just means, yeah, his time distribution's a little bit out of whack at the moment.
Sure.
Which means I've had less opportunity to sort of palm off, you know, design detailing, custom detailing work to him and stuff.
Yeah, so right.
Partly that I'm just feeling the pressure of that at the moment, I think. But we've talked about that in the past, of him starting to take on a bit of that sort of custom sales role potentially, or just helping with it more. But yeah, it's hard to, and part of it is like, I really enjoy it. Like,
yeah, right.
I love the customer interaction. Like I get great feedback on it. Like I had a guy text me from Adelaide the other day, vinyl collector, you know, I had a custom concept to him within 30 minutes. We're on a FaceTime call 15 minutes after that. And he was just like, this is amazing. Like, I'm so glad I found you.
Right.
This is exactly what I've been looking for. And your customer service is amazing. It's like, thanks, dude. You know, that's obviously a make feel good, you know, dopamine hit of like, I want to keep doing this. I don't want to delegate this bit of my job. This is fun.
To delegate the other stuff. I don't know.
Yeah. Can you? Yeah. I don't know. What else do I do?
So I go back to the, while it didn't work out in the end, I go back to the Pocket NC founder quitting. Is, we've talked about this a few times.
How Captain
hired a CEO,
Captain Fivexus.
Yeah, Captain Inventor Captain.
That's yes.
On Instagram, I think. And they, you know, he spent a couple of years working on that $70,000 to $90,000 Fivexus. They ended up killing off at one point. But I think about him often. I don't know him at all. Just that his, it seems like their story was that people like you and I that want to go design and make stuff but have to do bookkeeping. And he's just like, I'm not going to make decisions anymore. I'm just going to go make cool stuff in the corner by myself, you know, was what it seemed like. But he's probably working with other people. But it was like, oh, he's got the life. That's the dream. Like everybody else is making the production, making the things happen. And you're just like, I'm making a five-axis CNC now.
Yep. Is it telling that the... that it failed, I wonder. I wonder why it failed. Not to make assumptions, but.
Yeah. I don't know. Putting a note on the shop board. Hold on.
Sick.
I have found some really amazing, you know, I started out with Home Assistant being this kind of like really basic thing. And you were making all these cool dashboards of your like home energy stuff. And I was like, I don't really have dashboards. It kind of these weird, and it takes a little time, I feel like, to get to understand how you customize it. And I still don't have heavy customization. And it, you know, you literally just have to spend some time building out the visual side of it. But what's been so amazing, and I haven't like tied anything directly into it, but I just pass stuff to Claude or Cursor and go, I want to be able to like have an automation where if I walk into the UMC space, I think I said this before, I want the light to turn on based on a motion, you know, overhead light. And it's this sensor, this, you know, give it the little pieces and it just writes the YAML file for you. Like I gave it the whole YAML I already had. It writes it, dump it back in. It's like, walk back in there the next time it works. And I've kind of gone a few steps further now where like I'm using the security cameras we have that I've had for like a decade. They tie into it and you can use the motion sensors on them. And like, certain parts of the image.
Yeah,
you can, like,
yeah.
track and then be able to, like, that's say, awesome. Oh, the UMC is still running. Turn on and off our light in on my desk so I know if it's running. And it's just, like, easy because of the way that the coding tool makes it.
Are you manually passing it the YAML? Or are you just letting it find it?
Yeah, which I think I could do it because I haven't, I haven't given it. That's true. I probably could probably use Cursor a little more actively than I am. I don't usually use the Claude code. I just kind of pass it via chat. I don't know. I don't love the Claude code thing.
Jesus. I did try it home this week, funnily enough, as a good little distraction on the weekend on my Home Assistant PC at home. I was like, I'm sick of this. Mm-hmm. Default dashboard. Hey Cursor, which is I've got running on that. I've given all my Cursor instances basically full disk access, which I hopefully Justin spank me for this next week and tell me off. But like,
not this Justin.
No, the other Justin, the prophylactic one. I'm just like, hey, I'm sick of this dashboard. Can you style it up? Some better colors with better gradients on my little needle dial so it's easier to read and better labeling, blah, blah, blah. And it's just, bloody does it. And like, finds the YAML.
And so you're not even, oh, okay, wow. Yeah, that's smart.
So I'm just writing to everything. And it's probably a much riskier way of doing it. But in that instance, it's just a Home Assistant build. It's like, if I lose that PC, it's like, whatever. There's nothing on it that can really compromise anything, but I wouldn't do that.
At
work.
Yeah. And there's nothing that I'm never going to like tie a CNC into it necessarily, but the things around it now, it's like I'm both tracking the power usage of different devices, which is really interesting, and can adjust the sensitivity of like, well, when we're changing parts out every 9 minutes, have it turn off every 5 minutes, you know? So that when we leave, half of the time that we're not in there is dark, not light, because we're not in there otherwise. We're leaving to go into the other shop. But the thing I just added this week was, I think I showed you before, this little Google Home I got for $20 off of eBay. And I actually just bought 3 more of them because the success of this was so easy to integrate into Home Assistant. I'm not asking it anything really, like as it's normally used to say, hey, G-word, do this thing. It's G-word. Just the first thing I've had that you can output sound from Home Assistant easily. So I have a webhook from Shopify firing into Home Assistant, and that through Cursor or Claude doing a YAML file update for me, it automated outputting an audio file, and then I had it append like the amount of the sale afterwards. So it's just like super easy to add like a new feature. And our new shop coordinator, like it went off the other day. That is so encouraging. And I was like, I know, like such a like dopamine boost for like, it used to just be the lights flashing and now it's like, oh, cool. There's a sound going off. So I'm going to add some more on the shop for $18 a piece off eBay right now. Used.
Like just second handies. Yeah. Nice. That's sick. That's fun. Fun.
It's so easy.
Yeah, see, this, I don't know, my Home Assistant build is about like 10 projects deep in Cursor. I've got Home Assistant running at work. Oh, you're down the rabbit hole, dude. Pile of Shelly's on your desk. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that desk is over there, a bit dusty for me at the moment. I've got some ESP32 cams, which I haven't played with yet. Just like raw circuit boards with little web cameras on them, which I think are utter shit, but I'm curious because they're power over Ethernet. I'm wondering whether they're a more stable like robot monitoring camera because they're not on Wi-Fi. They're properly wired.
Yeah.
Again, it's just one of these things I started and haven't returned to.
Yeah.
I just need more desks to fill up with more projects.
Yep. My desk is out of control right now for that same reason. But behind me, which is probably funny. I don't know if anybody's ever noticed this, but I usually mostly hide them, but the desk behind me is just mostly product prototypes. And it's, if I move too much, you could probably see most of them, but at this point, there's actually nothing that looks, there's like tool tag towers. that are partial prints that haven't been finished. There's some other stuff in boxes.
Yeah. I was chatting to an agent during the week, actually, about, like, what's wrong with me? Why do I leave shit everywhere, half-finished projects on every horizontal service? Like, what does that mean? Like, how do I improve my life to make this, like, this is obviously my default state. How do I make this work better for me? I'm not going to stop leaving projects everywhere, but, like, how do I make this more effective? And it was like, you just need to use more pegboards, man. Like, stop putting things on desks and put things on the wall so you can see them.
Okay. Threadboards.
Threadboard. Yeah, you should get this product from Mike Butter.
Do your agents give you, like, shit or, like, use your own stuff for you? Like, mine will be like, oh, when you use Airshop, you can. And I'm like, God, I know I can use it. I'm not. Like,
yeah. This was in an isolated environment that knows nothing about me. Sometimes you just got to go to the anonymous source of truth.
Right.
That irritates me greatly when they try and make in jokes about your own product line. It's like, no, go away.
How do I do this thing? Oh, you could use Shopboard to display that on your... Okay. What was the other thing I was going to bring up to you? I forget. I didn't have many things written down.
I don't know. Yeah.
Don't know. That's kind of it for now.
Cool.
I quoted a really large steel job, large for us. They're not giant parts, but, like, it would be a lot of machining. It's a bit of a challenging part, but it's totally very UMC perfect. And I've had the hardest time trying to find the material, which is just, like, basic steel, like hot rolled steel. Cannot find it locally, not weird sizes, but it's a very sizable job. And if I win it, it's going to be like 100 some hours of machining straight, which is a lot for us. We haven't really had a machining job like that, like a UMC job like that. So it'd be the first sizable amount of steel chunks. I have to buy a lot of tooling. Don't really have steel. I have a few steel tools, but not for this.
They need to be different tools just so you don't cross-contaminate, or they're actually different geometry?
Different geometry.
Okay.
Not always. You can absolutely, carbide is carbide to some degree, but it's the grinds, the angles, the number of flutes matters a lot.
Corner radiuses.
Yeah. And almost all of them, when you're going to shop for them, it's like kind of weird versus you shop on like R-Site or like any of the major wood router tools. Like, they're not really giving you, like, oh, if you cut Ipe versus pine, you'd want to use this tool versus this tool. But it's like very much like that when you're shopping metal tools. They have little charts where it's like, is it ferrous or non-ferrous, is it stainless, is it, and they're all maybe to sell you more tools, but they do seem to be very specifically designed. Yeah. It takes a lot longer to make these parts, particularly what I'm learning as I'm going through. It's just the time to cut the surface footage for each between this steel versus what we cut in aluminum's 3 to 4 times, supposedly, slower. Just kind of wild.
Yeah.
I've just been cutting the butter for so long.
get off the butter. Yep.
Well, I think I need to open up the office again. I got some.
Yeah. Got some fresh air in there.
Burping. That's what.
Sorry. Well, good to see you.
Good to see you.
Yeah. See you soon.
Oh, I did the wrong thing again.
Take care out there.
Winner. It really whips the llama's ass.
It's a weird time to play that, but. Goodbye.
Boom.
Goodbye.
We used to cut butter. Now the chips turn blue. Steel on the table and a job coming through. We'll be right back. Justin got a UMC and a serious stare. Steel chunks waiting in the shop floor glare. Now little aluminum, not easy and bright. The stuff fights back in the middle of the night. Dog bone slice and a cutter that screams. New tooling ordered for ambitious dreams. Feeds and speeds a whisper, cool and stops to hiss. Welcome to the job where you learn like this. No more soft cuts, no casual peel. No more pretending it's all like Butterfield. Tighten the vise, check the run out twice. Steel takes payment and it names its price. From butter to steel, from soft to real. Hear that spindle climb and feel what we feel. Blue chips flying like sparks in the dark. Shop floor courage with a 5X is hard. From butter to steel, yeah, the learning is loud. Stand by the machine, make the old ghost proud. If the cutter survives and the part comes clean, that's the sweetest sound in the whole damn scene. Path. The shop gets quiet, the spindle gets mean, and everybody watches that silver machine.